I referenced Peter King's report that the NFL is looking at two Christmas Day games this upcoming
season.
You
knew that they would have double barrel nostril openings for that.
They love it. They had one this year, Vikings against the Saints. They did 20 million. I believe that was about five times the rating the average NBA game did on Christmas Day. Yeah. That has to be concerning for Adam Silver and company. It has to be because
you know,
the NFL's coming.
Kiss my ass, Adam Silver. We're coming and we'll dominate the marketplace.
It feels like it's going to happen. And once they start doing it, they're going to do it almost every year. Outside of a game on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, I think they'll do it. Chat about that amongst many other storylines throughout the NBA. Here's Brian Windhorst from the NBA on ESPN. How might that pique the interest of Adam Silver and the owners in the NBA if the NFL decides we're going to start playing on Christmas Day?
It's not good. How do you feel about a big slate on Christmas Eve?
Right, do something.
Yeah,
that's not good.
Yeah, I do think it'll be cyclical depending on the day of the week. I mean, already when Christmas is on a Saturday or Sunday, there's some of that happens anyway. But certainly,
right.
Everybody takes a backseat to the NFL.
Yeah, and to your point, I don't think they'd play on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. But the NBA's owned that day for a long time, and they've also owned, you know, All-Star Weekend. They do it bigger and better than any other league, and it's way more of an event. And I think a large part of that, Brian, as you would know, is that their players buy into it. The players want to be there. They show up, and they look forward to it. I'm not sensing that's going to be the case this year. What do you expect the general mood to be among players this weekend at the NBA All-Star Game?
Yeah, you know, I think they'll go through the motions. I mean, they're only going to be there for one day. I mean, the thing about All-Star is it's sort of an extravaganza. And the unfortunate part about it is last year's game, I would argue that the fourth quarter of that game, that Elam ending that they call it, was as intense, as enjoyable as basketball as I've watched in the NBA in my 18 years covering the league. I mean, I'm not saying it was better than Game 7 of Cavs-Warriors, but it was right there. The intensity level and the high level of competition in that fourth quarter, I just ate up every second of it. And so it's unfortunate that they had the momentum of that, which the players who, you know, both coaches basically did make a substitution the entire, like, however long it took.
Right.
And the players who were on the sideline really wanted to get in the game. And so I think the players will be really into that. And I just think that you're gonna lose that. I mean, they don't even know which teams they're gonna be on until a couple of days before. That in years past they've done that draw like 10 days out. The whole thing, they're just trying to get it together. But you know, there was a report, and I don't know whether I believe this, but I'll choose to believe it. There was a report in China. I haven't seen it here in the U.S., but there was a report in China that 50% of the All-Star voting came out of China, of the votes that were cast. And I believe that they're going to have the All-Star game on broadcast television in China. Now, they've had streaming rights for the last year, but they've only had a couple of games on broadcast television. And it's for those type of reasons. I'm not saying it's all because of China, but it's for those type of reasons that the NBA wants to have this event, because it engages casual fans in a time when they need that, and that's why they're pushing for it.
Can you see any player pulling the pin on this, Brian? Last minute little groin injury. Oh, can't make the All-Star.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
A big name?
I
don't have a crystal ball. But you're asking if I'd be surprised. No, I would not be.
Yeah. Well,
that means again. LeBron's not going.
LeBron.
I'll say this. LeBron, no matter what you want to say about him, he checks the boxes. He fulfills his responsibilities. He is a guy who gets it. He doesn't skip games anymore. He will be there. I'm not saying he's going to have bells on, but he'll be there.
With Brian Windhorst from the NBA and ESPN. So the Raptors almost got to the halfway point without COVID, factoring into anything they're doing outside of the fact that they quite literally had to move countries and go from Toronto to Tampa, which obviously was an adjustment. But none of their games were postponed. You know, it feels like you're just on a balancing board to begin with in the NBA and in pro sports. And the reaction up here is, you know, when we heard the news on Friday, Nick Nurse and four or five members of his staff weren't going to be able to be a part of the game, and we heard Siakam was out, we on this show spontaneously, while the news was coming out, was saying, why are they playing tonight? Like, this doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, how can you play? We've seen other games be shut down. Like, clearly tracing has to happen. They ended up playing it. Credit the Raptors. They win. And then on Sunday we find out, no, they're shut down, and it's because they can't even get to the necessary amount of players, which means something serious has happened here. Can you explain that for us, Brian, from the NBA's perspective, why kind of force that game in on Friday, considering COVID was clearly lurking at that point?
Well, first off, I hope the coaches are okay, because we haven't seen outbreaks in the coaches in the league, and they're more susceptible because they're older. And frankly, you know, they're not, you know, in the top physical condition of people in the world like the NBA players are. So I just hope that Nick and his staff are okay. I really, really do. You're asking for consistency in the contact tracing. There isn't any. You know, the NBA doesn't release all the information that they have for privacy reasons, so it's very hard for people like me to make apples-to-apples comparisons. But even in situations where I'm aware of what's going on that's not public, I can tell you that their decisions seem to be inconsistent. They seem to really go on a case-by-case basis. And they just don't want to postpone games, especially now when the second-half schedule is set. And they're looking at, you know, for a lot of these teams, 37, 38. For the Spurs, I think it's 40 games in 73 days. I mean, that's just a breakneck pace considering these teams have to travel. That would be a breakneck pace even if you were in the bubble. But that's a breakneck pace, and they want to try to get everyone in. And you know, part of it is over finances. Every game that you're not going to be able to fulfill that goes under 70, you got to write a check back to your provider. You know, most of these contracts for these local TV deals are 70 games. You've got to guarantee. And if you fall short there, that's money given away. And that's, let's just be honest, that's a driving force for everybody. The money is the driving force here. So you hope everybody's okay, but if you're asking for consistency and reasons, I don't think you're going to get them. And you can talk to other teams that have faced shutdown, whether it's the Celtics or the Wizards or the Suns, who have had the same type of decisions made that have been frustrating.
With Brian Windhorst, we'll ask you the gratuitous Kyle Lowry question that is thrown around, you know, daily up here. You know what he means to the city of Toronto, what he means to Raptor fans, and his resume speaks for itself. But you're also aware that it's a business, like you pointed out. He'll be a free agent at the end of the year. He's not getting any younger, and this team, I think, is a playoff team in the East. I think can win a round or two, depending on how the chips fall. I don't think they're a championship contender right now. What's your understanding of where Lowry stands in terms of future plans with the Raptors and what other teams around the league are thinking in terms of where Kyle Lowry stands in Toronto?
I think Kyle is very much at peace with the situation. I don't think he is agitating for one thing or another. I think he will play hard for the Raptors rest of the season. If they want to trade him, I think he's open to it. I think if they are going to trade him, he would probably prefer to be a place he could stay long term so that his bird rights matter. But I think he'll play and he'll go all the way to the wall for the Raptors if they want to keep him. I think organizationally, I think doing nothing is not a good option for the Raptors. I think they have to decide, we're either going to add to this roster, we're going to make a meaningful move to upgrade this roster to bring us out of the middle of the pack and give us a fighting chance. And if that trade isn't available or you don't feel like making that trade, I do think you have to seriously look at moving him. And that may be a decision that gets made tomorrow. It may be a decision that gets made March 20th. I don't know, but that's probably what's going to be at the feet of Bobby and Masai. And the real thing that I don't know how the Raptors fan base would feel about Kyle being traded. To me, it would be a huge mountain to overcome, but some people I've talked to in Toronto say, no, the Raptors fans understand the score. They get it. But to me, he's Mr. Raptor, and I don't want to take anything for granted on that. But Masai has shown, whether it was firing Dwayne Casey or whether it was trading DeMar DeRozan, Masai is not afraid to make a move that could potentially be unpopular. That's not an issue.
Well, and that's where I would just not counter you, Brian, but as much, you're right. Everyone loves Lowry up here. He's Mr. Raptor, but everyone loves and trusts Masai equally. Like that's where it's an interesting balance up here, where on one end you're like, I want Lowry here even though he's not playing here. We can't go down to Scotiabank and watch him play, which I think eases the transition a little bit if need be, but I can't tell you how big of an icon Masai Ujiri is up here at the same time. So if anyone could smooth it out and explain it, it would be Masai.
I would argue that after Greg Popovich and Pat Riley, Masai probably has the most capital of any management in the league.
Yep.
And maybe even more. Maybe even more, because, you know, the Spurs don't make big, crazy, wild trades. So Popovich doesn't have to trot it out very often. The thing about it is that we don't really know what the market's going to be, but if the market stays the way it is, there's just no sellers, guys. They're probably the biggest name available on the market right now is going to be Victor Oladipo. He's having a terrible season. Doesn't mean he can't help a team, but if indeed Kyle was available, even on the last year of his contract, you might be able to exact a tremendous price for him because of what he can make. Now, you would have to potentially trade him to the Eastern Conference and maybe within your division, but even that would potentially enable you to raise the price. And if you can raise a price for a guy, for a guard at the back end of his career, at the last year of his contract, making that kind of money, you may get a situation where you may be able, where there may be an offer where you can't help yourself, where the only responsible thing to do is to trade him. But I don't think that the Raptors are there yet, and I also think they have to see maybe what they can trade for in the interim.
You said he would want to go somewhere, Brian, that he could be there long term. Like, what the heck does that mean? How old is this guy? How long are you talking about?
Well, I'm not saying he's going to sign a 5-year deal, but what I'm saying is, you know, if he goes out in the free agent market next year, you know, he may have to take a mid-level exception. If he goes to a team that's a contender, which is the only team that would trade for him now, and they get his bird rights, they can pay him a lot more.
Right.
You know, like, let's just say it's no secret in the world that the L.A. Clippers would love to have him. I don't think that they can execute a trade for him. I don't think it can happen. But let's say that he ends his season with the Raptors, and he gives a giant wet kiss to the city of Toronto and says, goodbye, I love you. And he wants to go play with guys he's close with in Toronto, Kawhi, Tyronn Lue, Chauncey Billups, Serge Ibaka.
Serge.
They can offer him $5 million. That's what they can offer him in free agency. If he gets traded there, he could ask for 20 and might get it. So that's why he cares. Where, you know, if he gets traded, he'd like to get traded to a team that he can potentially stay with so that those bird rights matter.
Well, this is how bizarre the world is right now, where I'm starting to think of which teams might be interested, and somehow I'm including the New York Knicks. I don't think they should jump to any conclusions. I don't think he will either. I don't think the Knicks should do anything crazy. I think they should continue to ride this wave. But 2 weeks ago, I was like, this is just going to fall off a cliff. And now I don't think it will. Like, I'm getting the impression like the Knicks are going to make this work. And Thibodeau's doing it again in terms of just grinding. And what do you make of the Knicks so far, Brian?
Well, maybe. Their schedule is not favorable. I will take my hat off to what they've done. I think they've way overachieved. They've been very impressive. This is a year where nobody's defending. It's the highest profile, most prolific offensive season in the history of the league at this point. The Knicks are second. Last year they were 23rd. You take a team from 23-2 in defense in a year, largely with the same personnel, that's, you're doing something there. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I think they have the third toughest schedule the rest of the way. They have a 6-game West Coast trip that's going to kill them late in the season. Coming out of the break, I think they play Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Philly twice in their first 5 games. They are in fourth place right now, and that's awesome. March 1st, fourth place, that's awesome. They're 3.5 games out of 12th. They have a bad week, they're going to be in 11th. So, I take my hat off to them. I'm not yet willing to say that they've arrived. But I think in terms of Lowry, I think you should look for teams that are competing for a championship like right now. Mm-hmm. There's 3 or 4 that make more sense than New York.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's not going to the Knicks, but I'll give him credit. They're in the race. You know, they're playing well. They're winning games. And first time we've said that this deep into the season in a long, long time. Great stuff as always. Thank you for this, Brian.
Take care and have a good day.
You got it. Brian Windhorst from ESPN.
So, he was sounding like a few gentlemen are going to say check, please, on the All-Star game.
I think he's got an idea of who that might be or where that's going, and an interesting take there on Lowry as well. You know, like, Kyle's a pro. The Raptors have been very good to him, and he's been very good to them. It's been a mutual relationship, mutually beneficial relationship. He's going to play. He's going to grind. He's going to be happy. But I think what has become clear here is he's not – this isn't like Matt Sundin, where he's saying, I don't want to go, don't trade me, I'll be pissed, I won't forgive you for it. You know, it's, if you move me, I can go to the Clippers.
Yeah, but I
also want to do that, or go to Philly.
I also think, Brian, that most athletes kind of have a thought in their head. I don't think his thought is, I'm happy to be Mr. Raptor, I'll be happy here, I don't really care, I'm also happy if you do this. There is a preference, and Brian didn't really know what that preference was. Everyone has preferences, man.
You do, but some of them are abundantly clear. Some of them are in your face, and some of them you go kicking and screaming to get.
Some of them are more abundantly clear because the athlete doesn't want to make it known, and I think in a situation like Kyle Lowry's, he would be somewhat wanting to hide possibly a motive to want to leave. That's my personal opinion.
Well, and I could see that because of his history. Right,
yes.
Like he wants and he should cherish his legacy here. I don't think maybe he's misreading the room. Maybe I am. I don't think Raptors fans would blame him. Some would not take it well if he publicly asked to be out. I don't think that's a smart move for him. Nor would I expect him to do that.
And maybe he doesn't really want out. But all I know is from my time dealing with professional athletes and listening to them sitting on the back of a bus or in a restaurant on the road. It's generally, I'm happy either way. Generally not, I'm happy either way. Because that's just never the case, man.
You're right. It's one or the other.
It is.
You're a human being. It is one or the other. And it may very well be, I've seen Marc Gasol move on. I've seen Serge move on. Kawhi moved on. Danny Green moved on. My best friend DeMar was out a couple of years ago. Like, he's looking around, and it's a different team now also. He doesn't have as much of a connection to it, even though they've won a title, and the city is what it is. But he's not even playing in the city. Not in Toronto. He's down in Tampa. So that may allow for him to push that thought in a different direction or more in the direction he's already leaning.